right. Good afternoon, Asbury. We are joining us today. We have Seth Kinua, and you are here on the WACW with the Embrace Radio Show. It is a chilly Tuesday afternoon, and I am going to spin it off to you, Esther. How you doing?
Doing great, Sophie. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
I hope everyone has had a great Thanksgiving. Maria, did you have a great Thanksgiving? Seth, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
I did. My dog was sick, as you know.
Oh, that's sad.
My violently ill dog. But it was good. Yes, it was a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and now we're back for two more weeks of the semester before we have finals. So Asbury community, I want to welcome you back to the Embrace Radio Show this afternoon. We are so excited to be with you today and to have you hear from Seth Kinua. But I just want to mention a couple things before I invite Seth to introduce himself. I want to let our campus know that we had a splendid Embrace conference.
That's right.
I think everyone enjoyed it. We had about 376 participants from across our campus. Students from Bethune-Cookman University and Florida Southern in Florida were with us, and folks from the Asbury Theological Seminary. So it was a great conference, a good experience. So campus, thank you for participating and supporting, and hope that you will put that on your calendar for next year, because this is an annual Embrace conference. The second thing I want to do this afternoon is give a shout out to Seth's family in Nairobi. Nairobi, Kenya. We're so glad that you are tuning in to hear us and to hear Seth speak to our campus and to our community. So welcome, Seth's family in Nairobi.
Who else is listening, Seth?
Natakugotea madangu. Ako Nairobi, na budangu, na bro Jesse, na familia. Shout out to all of you guys. Basically said I want to shout out my family, my dad, my mom, my brother. All of them are listening, so big props to y'all.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. So Seth, with that, take it away and introduce yourself, please.
Okay. Yeah, so my name is Seth Kinyo. I'm from Kenya. I'm a junior here at Asbury. I'm double majoring in communication and intercultural studies. So basically this is the start of my third year in America, so still trying to figure out how this whole thing works.
So Seth, did you spend some time in the UK before you came to the United States? Am I right?
I did, yes.
Okay. How long were you there?
So I was there for 2.5 years. I was basically doing like a gap year discipleship thing, which was supposed to be 1 year, ended up being 2.5. It was a really cool experience, sort of where I came into myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so first, let's jump back. Leave that gap year.
Okay.
And how you got to Asbury. We'll get to that in a minute. But tell us a little bit about Kenya. Give us a taste of Kenyan culture, birth culture. Tell us about growing up in Kenya.
Growing up in Kenya, man. I think, so it's the only thing I've ever known. So I'd say it was the greatest experience, largely because after leaving the Kenyan environment, then I realized all the things that were part of the Kenyan culture that I think I just like really enhanced life and the human experience. So I think the biggest element of that is just the social support system. So Kenya being a very collectivist country, mm-hmm. and how basically the whole mantra of it takes a village to raise a kid is reflected throughout the entire society. So yeah, upon leaving Kenya and realizing that the whole world does not operate like that, then, you know, really made me appreciate Kenya. But Kenya, there's a lot of noise, a lot of joyful people. We live life large. We love life.
And you grew up in the city of Nairobi, right?
Grew up in Nairobi and then moved out to a place, to a little town when I was like 12, 13. We lived there for like 5 years until the end of my high school time. Then my family's now back in Nairobi.
So you would call Nairobi home?
Mm-hmm.
You feel most
comfortable
there?
Shout out to the 254. Yes, ma'am.
I've been there, you know.
Have you?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It was great.
Yeah?
Yeah. Busy? Yeah. Full of people? But full I liked it.
Yeah, Nairobi has 6 million people. So it's a lot bigger than a lot of people think.
Yeah.
But it's a great place.
So Seth, what are some cultural or family traditions that you hold on to that were cultivated while you were back in Nairobi?
I think one of the biggest things was obviously faith, because I came from a Christian background. So my parents have been in ministry since way before I was born. So faith was a big part of our lives and how we sort of grew up. So that has played a fundamental role in sort of every other aspect of my life. But I think on top of that is just a love and a value for people. So how that was reflected through my parents and the ministry they did, and how they, again, Kenya being a very collectivist country, people come over everything, relationships over everything. And so whether you really know these people or you don't, there's just a sense to which we all sort of are there for each other. And so I think those two things have really played a big role in shaping me. So,
yeah, thank you, Seth. I think that is so important for us to hear in the West, because I think that the value of personhood, I think, really fits well, or perhaps shows itself more strongly in a communal culture, because the value is placed on the person rather than the task. And so I think it's an important piece for us to listen, and perhaps an invitation for us in the West to continue to live in this tension of valuing human life and respecting the task or the work that we have to do. So somehow coming to a place where these entities are given the respect that they deserve, right? So thank you, Seth. So moving along, what was it like for you to come to Asbury University? And could you address that in terms of what were some of your first aha moments, or what anthropologists would call as culture shock? So what was shocking to your system?
So I think, one, it was largely exciting because I'd spent a few years after high school, out of high school. And so I was really excited to get back to education. And America was a whole new experience, so I was excited to dive into that. But I remember coming in, and I did not pack any bed linen or whatever. So I, you know, pulled up into my room. There was a bed. I had no, nothing. So I remember I used my towel that was sort of, it was a little bit damp because I'd, you know, used it before I left. And this was like a 36 hours later. And so it'd been like in the bag all this time. And so it was damp and a bit smelly. Oh. But that's all I had. And I remember using like a sweater to kind of lay my head on. And my phone was dead because American plug, you know, your plug systems are all weird.
That's right.
The whole world doesn't work like this. So I couldn't charge my phone. So it was a whole experience. And I think that also significantly also reflecting a larger sense of culture shock, in that back home, I feel like I would have comfortably been able to, you know, walk into a random person's room and ask for bed linen or whatever and stuff like that. But this being a totally new place, and that sense of social support, again, not being as evident in the individualist culture of America, then sort of largely became the source of a lot of my culture shock, just losing that to some degree and all that looked like. But it was exciting. The CAF was a whole experience in itself. I'd never seen so much food in one place before. So,
Seth, could you speak a little bit to what kind of culture shock did you experience in terms of the value differentiation, right? So in Nairobi, Kenya, I assume there are certain values that are critical and important to that culture. And then we have values in the West, or specifically in North America, that hold our society together. So was there any kind of culture shock that you experienced in looking at the different values that are highlighted in different cultures?
Right. So. Yeah. So I think, again, the whole collectivist and individualist culture thing was probably the largest like differentiation in values that I noticed, and how that was reflected in, again, how people especially carried out their relationships. So for the longest time, I felt, and I think this has also been reiterated by a few other international students, that American relations sort of felt very shallow, to the sense where people would be comfortable, you know, you've been in class with people for a semester, a year, and we're still, a large chunk of our conversations revolve around pop culture and things like that, and there doesn't feel to be much depth to the relationship, whereas back home, even if you would have some degree of, you know, discussions on pop culture and all that, there would still sort of be an emphasis on sort of like more fundamental, like value-ish conversations. And I think that being reinforced by the fact that if I met you and we've had conversations, then I know that you will have my back to some degree, and that not being present here. So that was a big thing. Yeah, I think that's probably been the biggest thing. But I think you could talk about things about like how Americans treat elders as well, being sort of one of the things, considering I sort of came in as an old man. So that being like, what's happening with this? So there were things
did
like that.
Did you expect people to respect you more? Is that what you mean?
I expected folks to be opening the door as I walked in. You know, people would be bowing
down. Because
you
were so old.
Because I was an old man. I expected like a cane in my C4 box. So not having that around was slightly shocking.
Interesting. Yeah. Before we go to the song that you've picked for us, I'm curious about your transition first from Kenya to UK. And did you experience the same kind of culture shock in the UK as you did coming to the United States?
Not so much. So I didn't get like a typical British experience, because the place I was staying at in the UK, the ministry I was sort of doing the gap year thing with, was largely international. So probably about 80% of the people there were not British. Mm-hmm. And so we were all like this conglomeration of random people from all over the world. And so we're all trying to understand how to live in the culturally together, but also in the context of the UK. And so that made transition a lot easier, because we all sort of sought to understand each other. And
sure.
So that really made the transition a lot easier.
And maybe you were interacting with people who also came from more collectivist societies, since it was an easier transition.
Yeah, for sure.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, you have a song picked out for us. Can you tell us what it is and why you want to listen to it?
Yeah. So this song is called Nairobi by Mayonde. It's basically a shout out to the city I grew up in. Lots of love for that place. And she basically just kind of goes on highlighting the different neighborhoods. And they talk about the city. So hope you all enjoy it. And if you can get time to watch the video, do that. Your life will benefit. So.
Na wave ka mix za dema kufu vila na bounce kwa hit track ukipenda hala chuchu jiwe mayoyo hey we got the nunu I'm in love with my city boss I'm going kuku hey hini ya madem wale ukulenga mtani mkikutana Nairobi wana wave kwa mbali luku luku ni ya wathi utadhani Tamford saya kinenge shika mavanga Sanford hey niko ida mapara rira kanganya big up my hustle swana otamak mafore us. Wale makwa wamehama machoko shwale jiji kwa pia ni mama I'm keeping it real, keeping it local. I'm so raw, original flow though. And I, Robbie, ay, ay, ay. It's magic when I'm on the mic, I'm saying yeah, ay, ay, ay.
Ain't no city like my city.
They can do it like we do it in the 2-5-4.
Welcome back, Asbury community. When I speak, music just comes out of my mouth. We are here, Esther Jodhav and I, with Seth Kinyua from Kenya. And Seth, we've been talking about the value of growing up in a collectivist society in Kenya and culture shock coming into the United States and some of the things you experienced. And I'm really curious about hearing about your experience with race and ethnicity, especially given that you grew up in Kenya where race, as we understand it in the United States, is not the same conversation. So how, if at all, did your family talk about race and ethnicity in Kenya? And then how has that changed since you've come to the United States?
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, like you rightly pointed out, race, as it's understood in the American context, is not doesn't play that big a role in Kenya. So most of the discussions on sort of differences in social stratification were based on ethnicity and tribes. So Kenya has, I think, 42 or 44 different tribes and more than 110 sub-tribes. And so there's historically just been a lot of tension between the different tribes, and especially the two largest ones, which one of my parents comes from one of them. And so nearly every election cycle we have like post-election violence, and it largely stems from, you know, tribal conflict. And so that was how, you know, a lot of our discussions on ethnicity sort of came about. But we sort of grew up with them telling us that, reinforcing the whole idea of the image of God and that we are all made in the image of God and all that stuff. And so my best friend growing up was from sort of the opposing tribe from which I came from. And so with things like that and that being reflected in the relationships my parents had, I think really sort of pushed us out there to view people sort of not in their tribal like little cocoons, but to appreciate them as people first. And so that really helped. And then coming here, well, sort of to add to that, there was also the context of colonialism, which was how a lot, or to some degree, our interpretations of white folk and the role they'd played in our country was largely viewed through that lens. Because, you know, literally my grandparents fought for our liberation. And so, you know, we'd visit my grandfather, it was his people, his friends who died sort of for the independence of Kenya. So that was very real. Yeah, but then coming here, and it's a totally different ballgame. So for me, it was largely trying to understand how blackness is defined in this context, because I realize it has a very different meaning. I'm trying to understand sort of what that was historically and my place in that, while still trying to sort of figure out my heritage, right? And so, like, what blackness looked like for my African people, and, you know, on top of that, what that means for me as an African in America in this context with this other redefinition of blackness. So that has sort of been my journey. And so as I've sort of told my parents a bit about the things that I've been thinking through and some of the thoughts that have come up out of that, they've, you know, I was even talking to them last week about prejudices I realized we had of African Americans and things like that. And so I think my experiences here have broadened my understanding of race and ethnicity. And, you know, as I've shared that with my parents, we've sort of been able to go back and forth and realize how, even for us, we've sort of bought into prejudices, how we've, we need to be more exposed to what the image of God practically means for people, how that has historically been diminished, and, you know, what it means to restore that in people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are so many layers to that, right? We could spend all day unpacking what it means to grow up with sort of racism in the form of tribalism,
right,
branching out from that even in Kenya, and then coming to the United States and discovering that being black has a whole different context than it did in Kenya. So what strikes me about that is, again, the image of God, like you mentioned, that race issues in the United States, although unique to us in some way, are not unique as a problem, right? That we tend to put ourselves in groups and have conflict.
Right.
We can find that skin color, race, right, for all different reasons.
Right.
But that the image of God, seeing that in other people, begins to strip us of those prejudices, regardless of what they're built on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely agree. Definitely agree.
Yeah, Seth, and I think you made a very critical point that sometimes, unless we step out of the familiar, we do not become aware of the prejudices or the conceptions or misconceptions that we may have. And, you know, oftentimes, sadly, we just receive them as a process of socialization, and we don't even realize right from wrong. So I think you highlighted a very important piece for us, that after coming here from Nairobi via UK to Wilmore, Kentucky, you've had the opportunity of being exposed to much in terms of just not the landscape, but also the types of persons that you've interacted. So, you know, so I think, Asbury, it's so good for us to be able to have opportunities to be in diverse context. And I think we should take those up. So Seth, as we continue talking to you, I'd love to hear how your faith informs your identity as a Kenyan, as an African, and the way that you think about culture and ethnicity at this point in time.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Okay. So this is, again, all personal, and has largely stemmed from my experiences since coming to America. So a lot of my understanding and how I view it is based on, again, the whole belief in the image of God as it is represented in human beings and in human flesh, right? And so I think for me, when it comes to viewing race, it is in that light. And so I think God, for some reason, saw it fit to represent himself in the world that he created by, you know, putting nature, putting animals, and all these things point to his glory and his nature. But to that, you know, when he created humans, he gave us all very different characteristics, very different features, and even skin tones. And I think there's an element of that that is divine, that we sort of diminish and sort of insult God's nature and his intelligence by, you know, doing the whole colorblind thing where we say that we don't see that. Because, you know, a God who took the time to create the most intimate aspects of our DNA, you can't tell me that he kind of fluked and decided to give us all different skin colors. I believe there was something divine to that. And so my perspective then stems from that, in that the image of God, as it is represented in different skin tones, in different colors, in different cultures, is sort of an avenue to connect with God's nature and with who God is. And so as I relate with different people and all that that entails, and being exposed to more of God's nature. Now, obviously, there are caveats because we are a fallen creature and sin has had its effect on us. But I think that does not take away from appreciating all that God did in creating us. Just the same way, like, you know, in nature, stuff dies. That was probably not how God intended it, but that does not mean that we then do not go to the gorge and appreciate beauty. I think culture and ethnicity, I view it in a similar way.
Yeah, I think that is so helpful, Seth. You bring to mind the reality that we're not asked to or invited to respect or honor a particular ethnicity at the cost or expense mm-hmm. of dishonoring another. Mm-hmm. I think the invitation through our scripture, the biblical text, is to honor all mm-hmm. in the representations that we mm-hmm. find ourselves in. Mm-hmm. So I think that is so important that we're not asked to honor a particular ethnic group at the expense of dishonoring another. The heart of God is that all persons are honored and respected mm-hmm. from the lens of being made in the image of God. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for bringing that point home for us to reflect on. So as we Asbury, we're going to stay with you on for just a little bit longer since this is our last show of the semester. I kind of want to follow up with another question, Seth. Why then is the conversation about ethnicity important for us to engage in here at Asbury University? Why should we care
right.
about being informed or becoming sensitive not just to check something off, but to be sensitive to the reality of God's presence in every living, breathing human being? Why?
She might have answered that in the question.
She just might have been, yeah. So I think, again, for me, it sort of goes back to what I just said on fully appreciating the image of God as it is represented in human flesh. Because I think there's something to be said of even how God chose to send Jesus and sort of in the incarnation, and that he came as a human being, and that was how we related to him, and that was the medium he chose to bring our salvation for the entire human race. And so I think as you know, bearers of his image, we have a responsibility to dive into that. And I think that is much more pertinent, especially for a place like Asbury and for the Christian church, because historically, and again, just due to the nature of our fallen selves, we have abused that. We have not honored the image of God in ourselves and in other people. You know, whether you're talking about slavery or colonialism or, you know, our responses to people who've experienced natural disasters, you know, whether you're talking about folks with physical disabilities, all these different things, there are ways in which we have not honored the image of God in his children and in his people. So I think it is important to, in understanding that we are fallen and we have not, you know, done the best to represent Christ on earth, to then seek to rectify that and seek to, again, fully rehumanize people. And I think the definition of rehumanization, or actually humanizing people, would be in ascribing to them the fullness of what it means to be made in the image of God, racially, ethnically, culturally. So, yeah, that's just my two cents.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So good. Seriously, if we had another couple hours, I would be so happy. Because this is so rich, right? The image of God, what you all have been saying about how we see more of God when we see more of other people. And so exposure brings us increased appreciation, honor of people, honor of God. And it also has to do with our wholeness, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about appreciating the other. It's about who am I in Christ, that mm-hmm. I'm more whole when I have a broader view of who God is because mm-hmm. of appreciating who he has made. So I love that. I love that your story kind of reflects all of that exposure and honoring and your own identity formation, and good stuff.
Still yeah,
that's great. Seth, thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you.
It was Thanks really good to hear me. From you. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's so good to also have your family join in. So yeah. If you're still listening, mom and dad, back in Nairobi, greetings to you from Maria and Esther. We're so happy to have your son here with us at Asbury University. It's been an absolute delight. And I think I also want to say that along with Seth, this semester on our campus, I have just enjoyed some very deep conversation with students across the board. And so students, I am so grateful to you for being here at Asbury. And I really hope that this time at Asbury for you will be so formative in so many different ways that you will enjoy who you are becoming by being in this context. You know, Asbury is a very special school. I've heard it said all along, but I think I am becoming greatly convinced that we have a special place and a special opportunity at Asbury to really be change agents, but also to be trendsetters of something that God has already initiated. God has already initiated, and we get to participate. So I will stop with that, but I really wanted to just share these thoughts as we bring this show to a close this semester, that every story on this campus is important to the work that we get to do.
That's right. It's not our theme or our idea, right? It's what God is already doing in the lives of each of us individually and collectively. Yeah. Thank you, Esther. Thank you, Seth. So Asbury, this is our last Embrace Hour of the semester. It's kind of sad, but we'll be back next semester. But before you leave campus, you need to know that next Friday night, the 7th, from 4 to 6 is the International Christmas Market. And you should come. There will be food from Asia, Europe, Africa, and Latin America. There will be live music. There will be gifts for sale from different countries, fair trade items. And tickets are only $1 to purchase things across the Student Center on the MAP side. So join us on Friday the 7th from 4 to 6 for the International Christmas Market. To close us out and end us for the semester, Seth has chosen one more song. So you're going to introduce it. But before we go, Sophie, thank you for running our show for us.
Thank you,
it was a pleasure, of course. I enjoyed this very much. It's very great to hear everybody's stories and just be involved in this. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Seth. So tell us what's coming, what we're going to hear when we say goodbye.
Hiya. Anyway, this last song is Live and Die in Africa, Sauti Sol. It's just paying homage to the motherland, and that's where I want to go back. So hope you enjoy the song.
All right.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Asbury.
Thank you, Amy.